Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bunce, Sarah Bunce. Hello. Welcome back to another episode of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. What better topic for episode 107 than to rank some Bond themes? I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here, as always, with the inimitable Mark Blankenship. Hi, Mark.
Hello, money penny.
I did not know that that was coming. I actually thought maybe the little-known villain Ruxpin was going to make
what? What you mean little-known? I've been chasing after that bloke for 45 years, that nasty piece of work, and one day I'll stick my furry foot up his hole. That's what I'll do.
Oh, it's already gone totally off the rails, and it's a minute into the episode.
Good night, everyone. Fuck the FCC, I say.
Mark Andor, extremely well-known and beloved villain, Ruxpin. Would you like to tell the listeners why we are doing this today?
Yes.
How it came about?
So, a few weeks ago, our listener, Chrissy L., suggested that we talk about Bond themes, and Sarah and I both just thought, well, yes, that's a great idea. And then we decided, well, we should rank the Bond themes that have reached the top 10 on the Hot 100 in America. And then we realized, oh, we should do that for episode 107 because, obviously, and as luck would have it, there are 7 Bond themes that have reached the top 10 in America. So, like, you tell me how it gets better because I honestly don't know how.
Yeah, Chrissy, go play a lottery ticket. That's my advice.
Thank you, Chrissy. But before we get down to the business of ranking those songs, I do, Sarah, have a joyous bit of old business that I would like to share with the listeners. On the episode that you just heard, if you're listening in order, episode 106, we talked about Tina Turner's We Don't Need Another Hero and Typical Male. Typical Male, of course, is a song where she sings to a lawyer. And we said at the end of the episode, if you are a lawyer, please write back and let us know if you think this song is romantic. And one of our listeners, who is a lawyer, did write back. So now I would just like to read a bit of what John L. had to say when he wrote us. Okay. He says, I happen to be a lawyer and I have always loved that song because it is so, so batshit. If this typical male is in New York and representing Ms. Turner in a domestic relations matter, I would urge him not to loosen up his suit and tie until she is no longer his client because the New York Rules of Professional Conduct manual forbids that sort of thing. The, quote, your defense won't help my case line implies that this is instead a criminal matter, but it's still a bad idea. I guess back in 1986, attitudes were different. And, I mean, John, you've really brought some truth to light. Attitudes were different, and I just want to thank you for citing relevant case law, as it were, to just make us know, you know what? If you're representing Ms. Turner in criminal or domestic matters, keep that suit on until you've heard that final thwack of the judge's gavel, if you know what I mean.
And we are not in a spat.
Oh, no, we're not. In fact, tell me, lawyer, how we can say thanks. All I want is an email from listeners. Anyway, so, Sarah, that said, now is, let's get down to the business of ranking. How is this going to work today?
Speaking of operating outside the law, yes, back to 007. This is going to work pretty much the way our ranking episodes always work. If you're new to the podcast, this is how it goes. We rank the songs in question and assign them a points value based on how well we like them relative to the other songs. So, for example, if I ranked the famous original Bond theme, which we are not including because it did not chart, if I ranked that number one, that would get 7 points. My number two song would get 6 points, and so on down to the last one. We each assign these point values, Mark and I, and we will be joined by the Patreon supporters. Yes?
Yes, we will.
In ranking these, and then we add all the scores together and we see who brings justice to Cold War world and who is left face down dead on the tarmac. That was a terrible comparison, but you know what I mean.
It had to be done. And let me just say, too, we are so grateful to the many impassioned Patreon patrons who participated in this particular ranking. We would love to have you join their ranks. So if you would like to become a patron of this podcast and be able to vote in our ranking episodes, as well as get access to our special members-only monthly episodes, you can join us at patreon.com/mastis. And Sarah, I think without much further ado, it's probably time to start hearing some clips.
I completely agree. We will be beginning with Shirley Bassey's Goldfinger.
That actually, those vowels were a little too subtle. So thank you for your restraint.
Yeah. Look, this is always going to chart pretty well amongst punsters like myself who are married and touch their spouses in the wintertime with hands that are cold in places where cold hands are not welcome.
Sure.
And then sing Goldfinger, of course. We've all done it. But not as well as Shirley Bassey. Who's to say? Let's hear a clip and then we can talk about this first ranking single and how it ranks for us.
He's the man with the mind. A cold finger beckons you.
Sarah, thank you very much for including the phrase cold finger in the clip that you pulled as well. Just reminding us at home how to play. Also, it's worth noting that this is one of three of the Bond hits that peaked at number 8. There has never been one that peaked at number 7, but three have peaked at number 8. And this is Shirley Bassey's only American top 10 hit. She had been a massive star in Britain since the 50s, when in the mid-60s she had her first major crossover smash with this tune. And Sarah, I will start by saying this. I think it is worthy of note and respect that Shirley Bassey's song laid a template for a sound that has been connected to this film franchise for decades now. And at the time, Goldfinger was very much part of the ballad side of the British invasion. The British invasion obviously includes the jangly, bouncy pop that you associate with the Beatles and what have you. But the women of the British invasion made their name often with very lush orchestral ballads. Dusty Springfield's You Don't Have to Say You Love Me comes immediately to mind. Several of the hits of Petula Clark. And of course, Goldfinger is very much in that vein. And now, however, it would be unthinkable to hear songs like that from contemporary artists were it not for the persuasive ongoing power of this song and its film franchise. Like, the Bond themes are in a way always judged in comparison to this one. There's always the sense of, oh, this song is a return to form, or oh, this song is a this is a bold step away from what we're used to hearing. But the point is, this is the ur text that all other Bond themes are compared to, and I just don't think that there are that many songs in the canon that demand that kind of constant reference. So if for no other reason, I do respect the historical importance of Goldfinger. Those are my intro thoughts, Sarah.
Okay. I appreciate your signaled respect. This is unpleasant to listen to, and I won't be doing it again.
Oh.
I appreciate her like warnings about the plot. And this is just in the clip we heard and in some other lyrics, like, you know, talking about his web of sin, but don't go in. Like, the ways that singers of the Bond themes choose to approach James Bond as an object of the song is fascinating. And this one, this is a sort of extremely contemporary take, like a very modern take on a very like retro idea of masculinity. And also that, you know, she's singing about the villain, which is a little unusual. But she could also be singing about Bond. The vocalizations are just not pleasant for me. It's like low rent Sarah Vaughan. It's too shrill. It's not enjoyable. It's like a campy listen once. I'm all set. This was my very last song on the list at number 7, and I gave it 1 point. I absolutely respect what you're saying about it setting the template, and I do think it's important. I understand why it was popular. It is not for me. I will also note that I like made sure to scribble down who was the Bond, and this is the only Connery Bond theme
that
we have.
Wild. It is what's wild to think about,
because
obviously he is the
Orbon.
Lot,
yeah, but it's like it's mostly Roger Moore. It's
yeah.
Amazing.
Because
yeah. Anyway.
Well, because as we go through this, we'll see there's at least one hit from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 2000s, and 2010s. Please spare a thought for Garbage, Sheryl Crow, and Tina Turner, whose 90s Bond themes did not scale the charts, although they're all pretty good. But there really is a wide swath of representation. It's just interesting to think about the fact that this is the only one from the 60s. Well,
yeah.
I, longtime listeners, and you, Sarah, longtime friend of mine, may not be surprised to learn that I kind of dig the ridiculous vocal on this song. It's just sort of in my wheelhouse of over-dramatic, over-emphasized, over-articulated, queenly fabulousness. I love the big high note at the end, and I read when I was doing research for this episode that she pushed herself to sing that note so many times that she almost passed out in the studio, and I don't care if that's true or not. I want it to be true, because I come alive at the thought of a lady just giving it all to you. I think that this song, it is so impossible to hear it as a song. It's so campy. Like, like, you don't have to say You Love Me, the song I was mentioning earlier. It is very, very over the top, but it's still like, it's not about a mega villain in a spy movie, so you can sort of divorce it from its context a little bit and just appreciate it that way. This is so only going to ever be a song about a guy who, like, paints women gold, and it's just, I will say I'm not always in the mood for that. I'm not always in the mood for this kind of melodrama, but sometimes I really am in the mood, and that's why, for me, Miss Shirley Bassey lands in third place and gets 5 points.
Huh.
And that's also where the listeners put her in third place with 5 points. So, as ever, Sarah, when we get together to rank, I'm always just like, well, we're about to rumble on some shit, I suppose.
I really did not think we were going to be rumbling on this, but
I don't know. It's just like, this is to me the drag queeniest of the seven. And, you know, I'm always here for that.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. I just, like, it hurts my ears. I don't like it. So.
And here's the thing. You're not wrong either. It's just like, I feel like this is really just like mint and chocolate. It's like, you can totally see the other party's opinion, but if you either are or are not a mint and chocolate person, and it's like, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I'm the other way.
Well, at least we right-thinking people, you and I,
oh!
agree that they belong together. Sorry.
Except I actually don't like mint and chocolate.
You don't?
No, I'm sorry to have to tell
Podcast
you in this
over.
Way. I'm sorry to have to tell you in this way. I also really like raisins.
Bye. why.
You and Andrew both hate Raisins so much, and it is the Andrew and I have really had to work through a lot in our marriage to get over that hump, because I'm like, I'd like an oatmeal raisin cookie, and he's like, I'd rather be stabbed in the eye with a hairpin.
With a hairpin. It's very specific.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of getting stabbed in things, it's time to move on to our next theme, which is Live and Let Die by, is it Wings or is it just Paul McCartney?
It is credited as Paul McCartney and Wings.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I can never sort of keep that timeline straight as to when it was like Wings and it was like Wings plus sign McCartney, comma Paul. Like, just pick a fucking name.
I'm fairly certain he didn't know either.
Yeah, that's fine. The 70s were a weird time. This one is our first of most of our themes, which are Roger Moore joints. And let us hear a clip.
Say live and let die.
Okay, so I clipped that particular snippet because this is pretty classic 70s Macca / Wings, that it has like movements, like Band on the Run is like that. Like there's two or three distinct parts of the song. I thought this theme was from a later Bond film. It's from 1974. This is absolutely like classic Wings, and Wings is, I guess you should say, like the raisin of like 70s rock and roll. Like if you like them, you like them, and if you hate them, you hate them. I was raised with the Band on the Run album. I love it. It may not be good, but I love it. And I also love this song. Like it's pretty derivative of his other work and pretty like on the nose in terms of reflecting the content that it's trying to reflect. But I ranked it pretty high. This was my number three, so that's 5 points.
Great. And just some fun facts. This song peaked at number two, and it was the first Bond theme to be nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song.
What actually won this year? Do you remember?
Ooh, girl, I knew as I was saying it that you might ask me that, and I, okay, I'm going to vamp for a second. If you would like to just say a little bit more about Band on the Run, or
why don't you say a little more about what you want to say, and then I'm going to look that up.
Oh, that's okay. That's fair. Yes, we both have access to the internet after all. So, listeners, you may also notice that this is now episode 107, and now, for the first time, I believe, a Beatle is being discussed on our show. And I know that I feel like I have gotten so many just private messages, tweets, like, Mark, why do you hate the Beatles? And I just want to say again, I do not hate the Beatles. I just can take or leave them. They have never really stirred anything in me, and it is the assumption that I have heard from birth that I love them simply because they are to be loved that I hate. So it's a complex, but all that said, as we'll be discussing in a future single on for patrons only, there was a recent thing that James Corden and Paul McCartney did of James Corden's Carpool Karaoke series with Paul McCartney in it that I found quite lovely and moving. So, you know, I'm not like opposed. And the truth is, I'm also not opposed to Live and Let Die. I think it is a fun song. I think it's actually pretty interesting that the music in the middle is sort of weird. Like, it slows the groove down. And what is it matter to you? That dynamism is very interesting. I also think that this is one of the better uses of the film title in a Bond theme. It seems like a pretty clever... it's a pretty clever way to incorporate the sense of what Live and Let Die might actually mean, because so many of the whole thing with these movies is that they're named ridiculous things, but he finds a good way of making it sensible. And I can't be mad at a song that has just like a nice rock beat and a nice chorus and pretty melody, and also was covered quite well by Guns N' Roses, I might add.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's actually how I first became aware of this song, was because of the Guns N' Roses live cover. The video was on MTV constantly in the early 90s. And then when I found out later it was a Paul McCartney song, I was like, oh, cool. So, yeah, so for me, I put this song in fourth place, and that means it gets 4 points from me. And the listeners overwhelmingly put it in first, significantly put it in first place. So that's...
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know that I would have predicted that up front, but they really loved this song. I think it was the finals tally, the second... It beat the second place song by 3 votes. And the top 3 songs, which also include Goldfinger, as you know, they were so significantly ahead of everything else that it was really striking. Like, to get on the 3 songs that got on the podium for this one really got on the podium.
This did not get on the podium at the Oscars because Memories lit the corners of our minds.
Wait, and is that Barbara theme from Evergreen?
Or Evergreen? The Way We Were.
Oh, The Way We Were, yes. You know, it's hard. You can't fault Barbara Streisand's Oscar for that song, though, I feel.
Yeah. And the way it was sung by another multi-Oscar winner, Tom Hanks, in Big.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime you have to refer to pictures in my house, pictures. I love it. But we are getting off topic, I guess, because...
You know what?
You could argue nobody does it better than Tom Hanks, but...
Nobody gets off topic better than us.
God knows that's right. Okay. Are you ready to move on to the third song chronologically?
Oh, yes, I am. And this is Carly Simon's Nobody Does It Better, the theme from the film The Spy Who Loved Me.
Let's hear a clip.
Nobody does it. As good as you, baby, you're the best. I wasn't looking.
So,
this song peaked at number 2 for Ms. Carly Simon, and the preparation for this episode sent me down this long and winding path with her music where I realized I know so many more Carly Simon songs than I thought I did because they've just always been on. Like, anytime you've gone to the bank, anytime you have gone to the drugstore, she's just always been there. And I didn't realize how many of her songs I knew, but I was delighted to hear this song and to hear those songs. And this song also nominated for an Oscar. It lost to You Light Up My Life, which I think was incorrect in that.
Same.
Like, y'all got that wrong.
Yes, you did.
But I don't, Sarah, I love this song. I think it is really, it's just like a perfect little ballad. Carly Simon's vocal is the perfect mixture of plaintive and powerful. That the melodic thing of baby, you're the best, it's just very satisfying. And I also love the fact that what she's basically saying, nobody gives me that big sweet D like you, but she finds...
My notes literally say, this is a love song to Bond's D, and I don't hate it.
No.
And I don't.
I just think it's like a really clever way. I mean, she didn't write the song, unlike many of her songs. This was written by Marvin Hamlisch and Carol Bayer-Sager. But you know what, y'all? Good for you for giving us such a sweet and tender ode to the good, good D. The only reason that I'm giving this a ding, a slight point off, I do feel that the incorporation of the phrase "the spy who loved me" into this song is really awkward. It's the only flaw in this other perfect gem of a song. So that's why I've got it in second place with 6 points.
That is legit. It's so bad that it almost sounds like they dropped it in there like ADR. Like, yeah. It's very obvious. I don't give a shit. It's a fun song. It's great to sing along to. It shows off her range. I love that it's like, it's both a love letter to D and a like Dear John letter to D. Like, there's really a lot of, like, all the seasons of love with D are represented in the song. And I felt pretty sure that this was going to start out as my number one, but then like drop down, and it didn't drop down. It's my number one, 7 points.
Nice. And for me, this is one that when I started this, I was like, oh, yeah, that'll be like in the middle to the bottom for me because I hadn't heard it in a really long time or had maybe never really quite paid attention to it. And then when I started to listen to it, I realized, oh, shit, no, this song is great. So she bounced right up those rankings. And the listeners loved her, too. They also put this song in second place. One of those. So now we know all three of the songs on the listeners' podium. And they put it in second place, which gives it 6 points. So a very, very strong showing from Carly Simon and her number two hit. Well done, girl.
Yeah.
And next, we have the second ever chart hit for Scotland's own Sheena Easton, who we also have never talked about before, but who it turns out I have a lot of thoughts about. Before we get into those, though, here is her number four single, For Your Eyes Only. Let's listen to a clip. I never felt till I looked at you. What is your relationship to Sheena Easton in general and to this song in particular?
All right. In general, this is where I think my being 5 years older than you sort of might make a difference, because this shit brings me straight back to like third and fourth grade. Like going to every town had one of those t-shirt stores where you picked out a t-shirt and you picked out an iron-on transfer and they had the big steam press and that's what you bought other kids for their birthday.
Sure.
And like letterings and stuff like that. And so that brings me back to being in those places which had a particular smell. Like the iron-on transfer paper has a particular smell when it's being cooked, basically. And then like going to the Florham Park roller rink for the party and Sheena Easton would be on in the whatever t-shirt, hut, and it would be on in the car and it would be on at the roller rink. She was impossible to skate to. It is a flawless time capsule of a certain period, like 1982, I want to say that it's very 82.
Yeah, you're basically right. I mean, it was 81 into 82 when Morning Train, Modern Girl, and this were all everywhere.
I find the only for you pronunciation, I understand that she's Scottish. I have always found it extremely annoying, and nothing in the intervening 36 years has changed my feeling about that. This is an extremely of its time torch song about basically being reluctant to get undressed in front of anyone except James Bond, which, okay, we get it. I was excited to revisit this song and then kept it. This was like the opposite of the Carly Simon song. It just kept dropping down despite a video which Mark shared with me that brought me so much joy.
Oh my God.
Her performing this at the Oscars. And these like fake lasers and people, like she's like in this little dance video that they're basically making. And there's all these people like somersaulting and like a car is, quote, blowing up, unquote.
And there are people dressed like other Bond villains throughout the years. Like there's the guy who has the cat, but it's so clearly in this one, like a fake cat.
Oh, no, they do a close up on it. It's obviously a stuffed animal. Blofeld, I think, is that guy. And it's just like, dude, I mean, it's glorious, but it's also very grim and sad.
And the laser effects when they shoot the lasers are so clearly added onto the screen and cannot be seen in the auditorium.
Yeah. And you're just like, what were they even responding to in the theater? Oh, that's right. Literally everybody was taking cocaine.
It was openly. It is. I feel like seeing that video was such a clear indication of what we've lost at the Academy Awards, because that shit is so tasteless and so insane. And that whole brouhaha a few years later about the Snow White Rob Lowe fiasco, I think permanently killed the Oscars' ability to just not give a rusty fuck about you and just blow up a car on stage and a fake cat. Sheena Easton is like, she's up, she's down. What level of the stage is she on? I don't know. There, at one point, I think there might be seven Sheena Eastons running around.
And then she's trying to move up four levels in this weird, like, Q-Bert-looking stage. But her,
yes.
She's wearing one of those, like, Donna Martin mermaid situations that probably weighs 70 pounds because all the sequins. She could barely move. And one of these Bond dancers has to basically, like, awkwardly carry her up the stairs.
God,
like, she's
incredible.
Fucking pallet of firewood. It's so awkward. I mean, I loved it. The song, she's a strange case because she was everywhere for like a year and a half and then she was gone, at least here in the States. So bless her heart. I feel like she has a nice voice, but it's not necessarily suited to this genre and she should try to do something else like choral singing or something. Anyway, this was not a favorite of mine. Number six, 2 points.
Okay. So yeah, Sheena Easton, I became aware of her. So she had 8 top 10 hits, if you can believe it, in the United States.
Oh no, I can.
So
they adored them all.
And they were all clustered, except for one, they were all clustered between 81 and like 85. And it was We've Got Tonight with Kenny Rogers was one. Sugar Walls, which was one of the songs that Tipper Gore specifically lambasted, written for her by Prince.
I mean, it was very obviously about her veg.
Yes, like, and even... I'll tell you what, Sheena Easton, I think you're right, is not necessarily the most convincing sort of epic balladeer. She's even less convincing as a horny sex pot Sugar Wallsier. Sugar Wallsian? But
Den is it Sugar Woodlian?
Sugar Woodlian. Hello. Oh, what do you mean, Sugar Woodlian? That was the name of me first bird. Then she came back in the late 80s. She and Prince had
it's fine. I'll be fine.
In the late 80s, she and Prince had that song, You Got the Look. And then she had her last big hit with The Lover in Me. Talk about The Lover in Me. Point being, I've always been very interested in her because she was one of the first artists in popular music to be discovered on a talent show. There was this show in England where every week they would put someone, an amateur, into a professional situation that they wanted to be in. They did a chef, they did a ballroom dancer, I think, and they did Sheena Easton as the episode where it was a singer, and she became a huge star because of that. So all of this is still me dancing around the fact that I love this song. I don't know why it took me so long to get here. Oh, but one more fun fact. I can't help myself. It was nominated for an Oscar. That's why it was performed on the Oscars, but it understandably lost to Arthur's theme. If you get caught between the moon and New York City. Like, come on. That's an amazing song.
Yeah, it sure is.
But here's the thing, Sarah. I listened to this song, and it became the song over the last week and a half that came back to me the most. I couldn't stop. I love it. I actually totally agree with you about the weird pronunciation of, yeah, it doesn't matter. There's something about the earnestness, the faux elegance of it. It's just such a fake yet wonderful song. Everything about this song is like the New York, New York casino in Vegas, where they have constructed New York City in a simulacrum of what you expect it to be. Like, this is a song that sounds like it has feelings, that sounds like it's emotional, but it isn't. And yet, for whatever reason, I love it so much. I just love the artifice of it. I love the fact that the beat, that there's this like subtle beat that drops in over the chorus. I don't know. Sarah, first place. I put it in first place. I gave it 7 points.
Wow.
I never would have predicted it. But here we are. I love it.
I mean, I didn't think that you would hate this song, but I did not see this coming in at your number one.
I know.
Very interesting.
Well, you
know. I thought we'd be much more closely aligned on these, and we are not.
We are not.
And it is hilarious. I am loving this.
I mean, I just have to say, it really, when you were putting it way down there, I was like, yep, I that sounds about right for us. Like, this is how these ranking episodes always go. And I want to tell you something. When you laid, when I laid these songs out in front of myself, I never predicted that Sheena Easton's Syrupy For Your Eyes Only would become the one that was closest to my heart. And yet here we are.
Yeah, the, with a view to a kill.
The well, let me add, though, that the listeners, do they have eyes for others. This is one of two songs on the list that got no votes.
Oh!
I love you enough for everyone, Sheena.
Oh.
So by default, it is tied for seventh place and gets 1 point. But really,
oh,
it's didn't
honey.
Really get any support at all.
That's awful. Okay. Well, I think we just view to a killed its chances to make the podium, but you never know.
It's true.
The next song is View to a Kill from View to a Kill. It's Duran Duran. This is the last in our Roger Moore selections. This Bond movie, I haven't seen them all, but I've seen enough of them, and this one has the, in my opinion, best opening chase. Like, you know how there's that like signature opening sequence where like he's whatever driving the, you know, driving a motorcycle through an ice hotel or whatever it is. That was a Brosnan one,
right?
In this one, Roger Moore is driving only the front half of a 1979 Chevrolet Malibu through the streets of London and into the Thames. It's fucking great. Here's a clip.
A sacred wine, a mystery keeping inside. The weekend's wine, until we dance into the fire. That fatal kiss is all we need. Dance into the fire, to fatal sounds of broken dreams. Dance into the fire, that fatal kiss is all we need. Dance into the fire.
I would like to observe first that yes, it's not just you. This melody line is very reminiscent of the song from the climactic dance sequence in the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, Staying Alive. Maybe it's just the lyrics that make me think of that. This one, to me, is greater than the sum of its parts. Like, this vocal can be a little strained. The lyrics are a little obvious. But I find Duran Duran perfectly suited to this job. Like, for a mid-80s Bond movie, who else but Duran Duran, who were like very sexy, very British,
very in love with excess and the
yes.
excess of glamour.
Uh-huh. And I just like, I really like it. I think it does exactly what a Bond theme is supposed to do. I think that it's sufficiently rare, at least it's rare on this list, that you have dudes singing about, you know, doing the theme and singing about Bond or his villains or whoever. Like, these are the only guys on the list, yeah?
Other than so, Paul McCartney.
Oh, right, Paul McCartney. But it's like, and this is also very rarefied company. Like, I remember when it was announced that they were doing the Bond theme thinking, wow, Duran Duran is like for real now. Like, now they're in the, like, now they're in the academy, basically.
Right.
Like, that's a tenure track position, is to get the Bond theme. I really like this one.
Really well said and very true.
I really like this one. I really, but I will absolutely understand if people are like, eh? Because it's, like, I kept listening to it all week. It was my Sheena Easton of the week. So I had it at number two with 6 points.
Well, this is one of the things where I am happy to say that I actually, and this is very rare for our ranking episodes, I like every song that we're talking about today. I made a playlist of all of them, and then I also threw in A-ha's The Living Daylights, and I threw in Shirley Bassey's Diamonds Are Forever, and I threw in Garbage's The World Is Not Enough, and I threw in Sheryl Crow's Tomorrow Never Dies, and I like all of those songs, and so I'm not mad at any of them. And this was, for me, a situation where I just had to go with some sort of mystical reason to put things in particular orders. And the reason this song is my last place song, although I really like it. So there's, but the reason I put it in last is only because it is the one that when it starts, I have the least amount of excitement about hearing it again. Whereas if you play, if I hear the opening strains of Rio, I would be like, fuck, everything stop. We must listen to Rio. So I was not only judging it in comparison to Bond songs, but to other Duran Duran songs. And I was like, this is a really good song that I would never leave off of a Duran Duran Greatest Hits album or whatever.
And that's interesting because their opening is extremely reminiscent of like the original, like the overall Bond series theme.
Mm. Fair.
No, anyway.
Anyway, yeah. So I just feel like this is a great song. There's just something about it that's a little less sticky for me. Gotcha. It's worth pointing out, though, that this song is also, in America, the only Bond theme to reach number one on the chart.
All right.
So from a chart perspective, this is actually the biggest hit. And
however.
But I think, you know, I think that that speaks to the fact that Duran Duran, they had a number one single with a song that also brought them into the Academy. Like, they were a real force to be reckoned with. And I'm glad that history seems to have reevaluated their role. And we're going to be talking we're going to be talking in a future episode about a Duran Duran album that maybe people still don't like, but whatever. I'm really in the tank for this band. And I love at the end of this video when he says, Bon, Simon Le Bon. Like,
oh my God, pregnant. Sarah's pregnant.
And it also, yeah, Andrew too, he said that he had many an impure thought about Simon Le Bon during these days.
Oh man, same.
Well, the listeners were in between us, Sarah, and they put View to a Kill in fourth place, which means it gets 4 points from them.
Okay. Well, all right, so this, our next song, finally, we get to talk about another Madonna song.
I know, honestly, I feel like she's gotten such short shrift from us.
I know, it's really a pity. I know that this was causing you some real conflict in terms of where to rank it. I'm not convinced that you have even decided, should we rank it first and then play the clip so that you're not upset again, or should we play the clip?
No, I finally settled on where I want to put Madonna's Die Another Day, and I have worked out my reasoning. Yes, so Madonna was the first person to have a top 10 hit with a Bond theme since A View to a Kill. I mean, obviously we're doing this in chronological order. You think about it, that's like 20-something, almost 20 years between Bond hits. And actually, no, it was more than 20 years. It was over 20 years between top 10 Bond themes.
Yeah, this is a Brosnan-Bond joint. What's his name?
Pierce?
No. I know Pierce Brosnan. Who was the Bond before him? Dalton.
Yes.
Poor Dalton. He has a great sense of humor about that. I've always found it sort of like heartening that he's like, yeah, we tried to make him like an environmental pinko and it just didn't work out. I don't know. And then he'll like he parodies it and himself all the time, and I think that's pretty amazing. Anyway, thumbs up on Timothy Dalton, but his Bonds were boring.
Yes. Well, here is Madonna's number 8 hit, Die Another Day. Sigmund Freud.
Analyze this. Oh, Madge, no. I had no memory of this song. I will say this. She looks her prettiest, I think, in this video. Oh. I love that short wavy bob on her.
Agreed.
And this video is fucking intense. It's amazing. I watched it like 3 times. But I don't love the song. Because I just wanted to, like, at one point I had the video playing and I muted the sound and I played music instead over the video.
Oh, the song music.
Yes.
Yeah.
still works. P.S. I mean, this video is like really, it's a lot. It's really fun to look at. I think she probably worked on it for like longer than Pierce Brosnan worked on his stunts. It's very cool. I just feel like, and like, it really fits the brief well. Like, I think that she does a good job marrying the franchise and the time in which this was written and her sound at that time. Like, I think she did a good job putting all that stuff together. I don't dislike the song. I just, it's too much like other songs of hers that I like better. Mm-hmm. And this is one that kept dropping because it was like, I think I actually am putting it where I'm putting it because I like the video and not because I like the song. That said, I don't hate it, and it wasn't last, but I did have it in fifth place, so that's only 3 points from me.
Well, that's also where I put it.
What?
I respect the song for its ambition in that the way I interpret it, at least, she is writing a song about the warring halves of her psyche, and she's like, which part of myself am I going to kill off so that I can move forward through my life? I guess, yeah. And then like, it's like, I feel like she keeps switching narrative voices so that it's like the sort of positive and the destructive forces keep getting to talk. And then each one of them is like, yeah, well, I guess I'll die another day because you ultimately cannot escape yourself, which is also kind of what's playing out in the video. Like, it's like Madonna is being held down by these like crazy communists, and they're like inside of her mind. But there's also this room full of statues of the old Bond villains, kind of like what was happening to Sheena Easton. I mean, it's really crazy. The reason that I do like this song, again, like I said, I don't hate any of these songs. It is not her greatest song, but I give it points for being the only Bond theme to not be completely straightforward and serious. The reason that I clipped the Sigmund Freud part is there's like Madonna's signature irony is in this song, in a way that none of the other Bond themes have. And the Bond films are full of winking humor, but the Bond themes almost never have any. They're always played super straight. And I think it's a testament to Madonna that she decided to fuck with the formula a little bit. And it's interesting that you bring up the song Music, because both that song and this song, she wrote and co-produced with this French guy, Milhouez. And we're definitely exploring this folk electronic thing that was going on in there. Like, you can hear that it's the stuff that they were interested in as a collaborative pair in this song.
Yeah, totally. And so
big ups to Madonna for fucking with the system. But yeah, it's like, if you're going to lay a Madonna song in front of me, if you laid 10 Madonna songs in front of me, or even 3, and this was one of the choices, I would never choose this one first. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cause I just don't, It still doesn't stick with me exactly. And it is possible, I think usually she stayed on the right side of the vocal sweetening in terms of like knowing exactly when to stop. And this is like too, they're just fucking with it too much,
yeah.
Which I think could probably be taken as a like larger comment on the content that the song goes with, but I think is actually just, like, it's just a little too much. A little too much.
But again, though, good for Madonna for swinging for the fences. But yeah, like, if you were to, yeah, everything you just said. Now, this is the other song that got 0 votes from our listeners. So
yeah, sorry, buddy.
It's not like I don't understand it. So there you go, Madge. Well, that brings us to our final and most recent Bond top 10. The song is Skyfall by Adele. It reached number 8 in America. It's the third of these 3 number 8 peaking songs. It is also the first Bond song to actually win the Oscar. The second Oscar-winning Bond song is that truly terrible Sam Smith, The Writing's on the Wall,
ugh,
which is the most boring piece of shit. But it didn't make the top 10 in this country, so we don't have to talk about it, thank God. but now let's take a moment to hear a clip from Adele's Skyfall. Swept away, I'm stolen. Hit the skyfall when it crumbles. We will stand tall, I'll face it all. Together, let the don't know. What are your thoughts?
I love Adele, but this is one of those Adele songs, and I think I've said this about an Adele song before.
Hello is the other one that we've talked about.
Yes, that it just never, like, I'm just waiting for it to start,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't start. I do like, this is a Roger Craig Bond.
Daniel Craig.
Roger Craig, Jesus. Roger Craig was a pitcher for the 1962 Mets. Not the same.
Next time guy. On mistakes that Mark is incapable of making.
Yeah, he was also a manager of the Giants, don't at me. I love that the vocal, I think Daniel Craig Bond is a little bit more nuanced and less like this cartoon, like dildo with guns kind of person.
That dildo he has, with guns.
That he has loved and lost. And I like that Adele's rendition of this is like rueful. There is also that plaintiveness that we talked about in the Carly Simon song. But I just want this to be bigger, faster, like more fun. This is a little too, I mean, it's a beautiful vocal, and I love that sort of like catch that she puts in the clip that we heard, but I like, it just never quite catches fire. And it's like, I know that you can do this. And like when she performed it at the Oscars, I'm pretty sure that she just like put like strapped the boom on and was like sliding up these huge octaves and then just hitting like top decibel levels. And I think that's what I want from the song and what I expect from the orchestration. And then it just doesn't quite go, but I still really like the song. And I had it right in the middle, fourth place, 4 points.
Very fair. Yeah. And I am right there with you. I think that my favorite Adele is a riskier Adele, and her weirder songs tend to be my favorites. But I can never be mad at hearing her fantastic singing voice. And this song is very stately. It is definitely a throwback to the template that Shirley Bassey helped create. I also think it helps in the fact that it is in maybe my favorite Bond movie of the like 12 or so that I've seen. God, Judi Dench is so good in this movie too.
I haven't seen this one.
Oh, it's great. And I know that.
I think the last one I saw was, I think it was the one before this.
Casino Royale?
Yes. Oh my God. I love that. Mikkelsen. Le Chiffre.
Well, in Skyfall, there's an amazing scene where Daniel Craig and Javier Bardem kind of seduce each other.
Okay.
It's all
right. Well, let's wrap this up so that I can go watch that.
And then Judi Dench, I know it's a shocking to say this, but she gives a stellar performance. Turns out she's quite talented.
Who is Q now? Cleese?
Oh God.
John Cleese?
Yeah. No, it's Ben Whishaw.
Oh yeah. Oh God.
Adorable Ben Whishaw.
All right. So I really do need to go and watch this movie right now.
Yes.
So what you got?
So
what
you
got?
This has been Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Goodbye. I put it in sixth place and gave it 2 points. But again, I like this song too. And the listeners put it in fifth place and gave it 3 points.
Oh man. Well, while you are totting up our first and last place finishers, I'm just going to note, in case you need me to fill, that
I do, yes, please carry
the soundtrack for Tootsie is really like a sustainer. Like it just keep being songs in it that I'm like, oh yeah, that was in Tootsie, and then I have to go and download them legally, of course. Should I keep talking?
Yes. I don't know why my math skills are denying me at this moment.
I'm telling you, it must be
you. All of my life.
I started too low. Sorry. So that
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
So, in a tie for last place with 9 points, both Die Another Day and Skyfall. It seems like it's the rare ranking episode where Madonna and Adele get last for us.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's hear our top two.
So they were in last, and then number two for us was Live and Let Die.
Okay.
And then with a substantial lead, number one for us was Nobody Does It Better.
Huh. Interesting.
And you know what? I feel like I'm not mad about it. I wouldn't have...
So your number one was Bassey, right?
No, it was Sheena.
That was your number... Okay. So your number one and number two...
Oh, no, what? You know what? Oh, my God, you guys. I did the math wrong. Die Another Day was actually last all by itself. And then Skyfall was next to last.
Okay.
And then Nobody Does It Better, which was my number two, your number one, and the listener's number two. That was our overall number one.
Okay. And then number two was...
Live and Let Die, which was listener's number one. And then we both had it squarely in the middle. So it was the listeners who really pushed... Die Another Day up to second place. And see, listeners, you have a direct impact. If it hadn't been for you, Live and Let Die would not... I think I kept continue to say Die Another Day when I meant Live and Let Die. Point is, listeners, because of you, Paul McCartney is a silver medalist in this competition, and he wouldn't have been otherwise. So never say that your vote doesn't count.
And also never say... Never again.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
And pardon me, I've got to go clean out my octopussy.
Oh, God. That's for your eyes only, Mark. Only for you. Listeners, this has not been only for you. Please tell a friend about us and consider visiting our Patreon page to vote on this and many other kooky things that we like to talk about on this podcast.
Y'all, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, a.k.a. me, and Sarah D. Bunting. And it's edited by Sarah D. Bunting as well. Do you want to talk to Mark and Sarah about song requests, ads, or birthday readings? Email us at talkaboutsongs@gmail.com, tweet us at TalkSongs, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mastus.podcast. To become a supporter and producer of this podcast, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastus, where you can get access to all kinds of cool bonus content and vote in our ranking episodes. Thanks for listening.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.